Yeah, no, the ball's fine. All these blisters, the home run rate, it's just a fluke, right?
Those are not exaggerations. Those are real. I mean, he's had the stuff since he was in high school.
When you post this episode on BP Toronto, oh, can you please be sure to include the recipe for Josh's birthday cake from the other day? It seems a reasonable request. And welcome to episode 75 of Artificial Turf Wars, where... yeah. I am your host, Greg Snooski. And I am joined tonight by Joshua Howsam. Josh, welcome back to our show.
Ah, thank you.
Where we don't show anyone anything. It's not our program. It's a program. The Blue Jays currently have a 13-2 deficit against the Royals as we record this. That would be 13 runs to 2 hits.
No, right as you said that, the Jays scored 2 runs on their 3rd hit.
Awesome.
So we should just keep saying this, and maybe they'll tie the game somehow.
What's now accurate? It's 13. Did I say 13-2? And it's actually 13. Well, yeah, 13-2. So, hey, they're right back in it. Good
Lord. Hey, it's 14-13. That's how this works, right?
We'll get back to you in about 15 minutes. See how it's going. The Jays were 9-7 in September and had won 7 of their last 10. And Brett Anderson got on the mound blister-free and just melted under the heat of the Royals' offense.
Not a saying you usually hear, the heat of the Royals' offense. But yeah, oof. His ERA at the start of the game was like 3.3 or 3.4. It's now 7.15.
And then he was promptly replaced by Santos, who just kept giving up runs. He didn't really slow it down. Including an unfortunate event in Carlos Ramirez's life. Would you like to say a eulogy for Carlos Ramirez's zero ERA?
I'm just too sad. I wanted him to do it. I really wanted him to go through the season without giving up a run. That'd have been so cool. But no, he had to go give up a 4 spot, including 2 home runs. Way to blow it, Carlos. Can't even have one nice thing.
He did go more than a calendar year without giving up a run. I know it doesn't show in the stats, but he actually gave up a run last on July 16th of 2016.
Yeah, no, that doesn't count. I'm sorry.
No. Yeah, even Dirk... who's the author guy? Pitch for the Jays
Hayhurst?
For a little while. Yeah, Dirk Hayhurst at one point had a 1.00 ERA until his last outing of the season. And he was like, I knew I wasn't really a good enough pitcher to have a 1 ERA, but it felt pretty good. And then I got lit up.
But especially for Carlos Ramirez here. It's like you're looking at a guy who had a 0 ERA, which looks really, really pretty. Through all of the season, and now his major league ERA is 3.27. I mean, that's just normal, you know?
Yeah, it's pedestrian. So there was another, even though the Jays won the game last night, we did have another perfectly Blue Jays 2017 moment, as you put it to me when we were talking about this. So what was our important role to play in this record?
Yeah. So as you said, and as you said, I said, so Blue Jays, lots of home runs this year. It's kind of been the thing. And there was going into Tuesday's games, there was talk of, you know, who was going to hit the home run that breaks the record for home runs in a season. A lot of power hitters playing. Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, the players on the Blue Jays. You know, there's Mike Moustakas for the Royals. Yeah, it was Alex Gordon who hit it off the Blue Jays. For those of you who are unfamiliar, among qualified players in baseball this year, Alex Gordon's slugging percentage is dead last.
Literally the least likely everyday player to homer. Period.
Yeah. And he hit the what was the 5,694th home run of the season, breaking the record. Of course that happened to the Blue Jays in 2017.
So there's a number of angles to take on the whole home run thing. Number one is the Blue Jays also gave up, as I recall, both Alex Rodriguez's 500th and 600th home runs.
I didn't know that. That's pretty funny.
Yeah. I know Sean Markham, I think it was Scott Downs for number 600. But yeah, it was another, I'm pretty sure it was another Blue Jay for 500. So it's like, wow, what goes around comes around again. You know, they're sort of known for these things in a bad way. Also, they set the record for most home runs ever hit in a season with 11 games left to go in the season. What is that? And they're still like, oh yeah, the ball? Nothing we can see going on with the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's 11 games. That's 11 days of games. So, mm-hmm. You know, that's 15 games times 11. That's a lot of games. 165 games.
Yeah. So one or two home runs per game?
Wow. So they can just destroy this record. Yeah, no, the ball's fine. All these blisters, the home run rate, it's just a fluke, right?
Oh, yeah. Surely it couldn't. I mean, global warming, hurricanes.
That's what it is. The hurricanes are causing winds that are taking the balls out of the park.
Yeah, yeah. They all just happen to be blowing to the outfield. It's obviously what's going on. Yeah, I think David Ardsma might have been onto something where he's like, you know, Major League Baseball probably knows if something's up with the baseball. That's kind of what they do, is the baseball. It's like, yeah, that could very well be. You know, you've been good, I'd like to say. You've been very well behaved up at this point of our little podcast.
I've just been waiting, you know. Yes. I know we're gonna get there. That's the only thing that's keeping me quiet.
I didn't tee everything up because I thought you would get excited this week and you might jump the queue here. So we're gonna talk now about Marco Estrada. He's gonna be a Blue Jay again. Are you happy, Josh?
Nah. Yes. Oh, I'm so glad. I did not want to have to see Marco Estrada leave at the end of the season. And so the Jays brought him back for 1 year, $13 million, which, yeah, I'm really happy about that. Not only because I love Marco Estrada, but because I actually think it's a really good move for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, he overall has been very consistent in terms of health, and he's been, you know, more consistent than your average pitcher in terms of performance. He hasn't been perfect, but you know, generally, you know what you're going to get with Marco Estrada, which is more than can be said for lots of pitchers, including ones who might be, you know, coming up on the free agent market. And, he likes it here.
Yeah. Yeah, that was one of the things he said. And one of the interesting comments he made specifically was, I don't want this team to make the playoffs next year without me there. It would be like that it would bother him if he left and the team made the postseason and he wasn't a part of it. And that's kind of cool, right? We don't hear that about Toronto very often.
No. I think he may be wearing a little pair of rose-colored glasses there, but so that's fine. It's a good attitude to have that you are, you know, you're coming back thinking not coming to this team is an opportunity missed is a great way to frame up the Blue Jays. I think that's really cool. Whether it's objectively true or not, I'm not 100% sure.
I don't know. I think there's a very real case to be made that the Jays could make the postseason again next year.
Yeah, I think they could. I think to expect them to is, until you see what happens in the offseason, I think is kind of, you know, like,
oh, for sure,
optimistic.
But it wasn't like he was saying he expects them to, but it's basically him saying, I can see this happening, and if I leave and it does happen, I'll be upset.
Right. Which is cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And we should mention, like, when it comes to Estrada, he had that really bad stretch for 6 weeks or so, basically, from the beginning of June till the middle of July, where he was just terrible. Like, he was really, really bad. And he sort of fixed it again, and he's been mostly Marco Estrada since. Well, I think there was one bad outing in the middle of that, but he's been really, really good most of the times out.
Yeah, yeah. Like, that's why I'm saying about he's not perfect, but he is overall, you know what you're going to get. He was able to get back to form, was able to get, presumably his control is what he was really struggling with there. Is, if the changeup isn't where you want it, everything else kind of breaks down after that. So he's a mature pitcher. He knows what he has to do, and he's not counting on all of his velocity to carry him through. He never has. And I think that's a good thing. That's the kind of guy you want as he's aging. You don't want the guy who throws, you don't want CC Sabathia, because although CC has found himself this year, he spent a couple of years in the wilderness trying to figure out how it works now that I don't have all my stuff. I don't think you're going to get that kind of valley with a Marco Estrada.
Yeah. And I agree with that. Because I'm so rational when it comes to Estrada. Another note. I think I just said another note before that, but hey, what the heck? Here's two notes. I love we both did that. he apparently, this came out during the press conference, was dealing with some sort of personal issues in the middle of the summer, which no one talked about. And it's hard to say how much something like that could affect him, especially when his command was the only thing that was really hurting. It wasn't a difference in his stuff or anything like that. So maybe that was just a fluky thing, obviously horrible for him, whatever it was, if it was causing this problem, and he really could just be this good going forward. But at the same time, for him, it's smart to bet on 1 year deal, because if he thinks, well, that's all it was, I can go be great again and get a big contract next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we shall see. I'm going to throw in, because it wasn't on our agenda, Roberto Osuna went on paternity leave. And then he came back, and he seems to be throwing a little harder.
I saw that too, and it was like Mike's son. It's like, oh, he's got that dad strength.
It's not how dad strength works, Mike, but it's it's fine, I guess. Any explanation will do. But he also got an extended layoff because of the paternity leave and the Blue Jays not needing a lot of him. I'm wondering if even something as simple as a few days not throwing a baseball is really where Roberto Osuna's at. I'm curious.
Well, I mean, if you just look at his velocity chart, in June, his fastball averaged 95.7 miles per hour. In July, 94.3. In August, 93.7. that's a bad downward trend. And it's back up over 95. In September, because he was hitting 96, averaging 96.5 in that start we're talking about, or that appearance we're talking about.
Yeah, and I mean, he was not at 96 last night. He was still over 95. So I know we watched this probably too closely, but it does seem like a little bit of rest might do him some good. And again, we are at the point where the Blue Jays would currently have to win out to get to 500. Surely. It doesn't matter for the team what happens to Roberto Osuna's arm, and it really matters what happens to what happens to it for Roberto Osuna's sake going forward.
I knew what you meant there. It sounded funny.
Yeah, it did.
I want to mention just what we're talking about though. He had 10 days off, which was the most he's had all season, and his fastball, he hit 97.3 miles an hour. That's the hardest he'd thrown in over 2 months. 3 months. Over 3 months. So, yay.
Yeah, absolutely. Now into, Boo is the other guy who is not signing a contract to extend for 1 year is the G-Boat, the greatest Blue Jay of all time, Jose Bautista, is truly in the twilight of his career. And this may indeed be the last home games he ever plays at the Rogers Center, which is kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah, it's kind of sad, especially like last year, for example, when we were thinking it might be it for him and Edwin. Edwin was playing like Edwin, and Bautista, he finished, people forget this, he finished last year very strong. Hitting some big home runs, and he had a 400 on base percentage from his last DL stint to the end of the year. So if that's the way they went out, it would have, would have felt better. Whereas this, it's kind of weird. It's like he's playing out the string, and it's like, oh, gee, should he even be out there at all? And that's kind of sad.
I mean, and yeah, it's oh, how the mighty have fallen is not something I wanted to think about when I thought about Jose Bautista, and it's just like there should be more in the tank. Like, I don't know what else to think. He just fell off the table, and there's no explanation offered for it except he's just not that good anymore.
Yeah, I mean, he's 37. I guess it's just he's done, and it's, you know, I will be at his last game, and I'll be standing and cheering because he has been a legend, right? An icon for this team for a decade, basically.
Yeah, I mean, Jose Bautista, whether you like it or not, is the franchise as it currently sits. Where is this team's story since 2009 without Jose Bautista at the middle of the story? Like, there is no other name that you could start and finish that with. It's him.
No. Yeah, it was Roy Halladay in the you know, from 2001 till 2009, and he left, and it became Bautista's team, and I guess it'll be Donaldson's team next year, but he's a pending free agent, so it'll be interesting to see where the next franchise player comes from, you know, before Vlad Jr. comes and takes the mantle, of course. But
this is Marcus Stroman's team. Don't fool yourself.
Yeah. I don't know.
It is. Whether you like it or not, maybe you liked Bautista, maybe you liked Halladay, right?
But I'm talking about like a guy who's like got the star level performance as well, though. I mean, Stroman, he's up and down, right? He's really, really, really good this year. I'm not trying to disparage him, but you know, Bautista and Halladay, these were guys that were at the top of the major leagues, not just the best player on the team.
I don't think you always have a player like that. I mean, you hope you have a player always like that, but I do honestly believe this is Stroman's team. I also believe that somehow he just blocked this podcast on Twitter. I'm not sure how he did it.
At TurfPod is no longer able to follow Mark Stroman.
I don't even know what happened. I think he's the one with enough, I don't know, charisma, if you will, to sort of be the face of this team. And no, I don't think necessarily he will be as elite as Halladay was, because elite, how often does a future Hall of Famer play for your team? And I understand the Hall of Fame rules probably won't let Halladay in, but in my mind, he's a Hall of Famer.
Vlad Jr.
Yeah, well, again, that's why I think 2019 will be an interesting year, far more interesting than 2018 can be, because we'll find out whether Vlad and Bo are ready and they're still here, or they've been traded for other assets or what, because that is far more interesting to me than what they can patch together / assemble / encouraged coax out of what they've got for 2018.
All right,
so let's check in with Justin Smoke. Number of home runs before Richard Leesum commits suicide by alcohol?
Two.
Looking forward to that. Yeah, it's a shame Richard never put a time window on how long he had to do the 40 shots. I feel that may have saved his life.
Well, he's still gonna get there, you know. 38 home runs isn't 40.
No,
in the top 10 in all of baseball, but still not 40.
TikTok. And then lastly, let's check in with the call-ups. You, rather prophetically last week, have reminded me that Richard Urania, who is doing fantastically with his batting average and his production, he could suffer a brief blip and look very much like a minor leaguer out of his depth. How's that working out for him?
So, after that game, which was the walk-off hit, he was hitting .324. He's now hitting .222. He has one hit since that time.
Oh, baseball is a fickle mistress.
It really is, especially for 21-year-olds jumping from not doing well in Double-A to the big leagues. He's also struck out 19 times over those 9 games.
Whew. Yeah, there's a just a throwback to the Jose Bautista. He did set a record this year.
Did he strike out today?
Oh, sorry, he tied the record. He tied Kelly Johnson.
Yeah, he hasn't broken it yet.
He hasn't broken it yet. Tied Kelly Johnson and who was the other?
Canseco.
Jose Canseco for most strikeouts in a season batter. didn't want that to be the record he tied this year, that's for sure.
Oh, it's kind of amazing that the record's only 159.
Considering the number of 200 strikeout guys who've played in this game in the last 20 years, yes. Yes, it is.
I'll just quickly touch on to Oscar Hernandez, too.
Yes. How's he doing?
He's doing all right. He's had a couple of bad games as well. But he got the two-run double. It's 13-4 now. It's coming.
Yeah, that happened almost right after we talked, and it hasn't improved.
No, it really hasn't. Yeah, so he's up to .271 batting average, and his slugging percentage his slugging percentage is pretty good. So it's almost .500 because he keeps getting extra base hits. His on-base percentage is under .300, but at 7 of his last 13 hits have gone for extra bases.
There are a lot of players who can now hit for power. Good thing they didn't do anything to the ball, or that would really mess up with that. But hit for crappy averages and not the greatest overall production. It's fascinating.
Yeah, baseball's weird.
It's getting weirder
because
every
baseball
day.
Is weird.
No. All right, that is us checking in with the call-ups. No real good news there, but hey. So, we were talking about 2018 and 2019, and the biggest name there is... is it Shohei?
Yep.
Ohtani, who is a Japanese, plays both ways, fielding, hitting phenomena with a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. And we decided, since the Jays have been attached to that name, that maybe we would go over and find someone who knew way more than we did about Japanese and Asian baseball. And we did find Sungmin Kim, and he's going to be back with us in just a minute. And we are happy to welcome, for the first time, to Artificial Turf Wars, Sungmin Kim, who is a contributor at Sporting News and a staff writer at River Ave Blues. Welcome to Artificial Turf Wars, sir.
Hello. Glad to be here, and thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure to bring someone new on, and we brought you on because you know a little bit more than we do about baseball in Asia and in general. And, of course, with the Ohtani talk, we'll start there. There's been a lot of talk about Major League teams scouting this two-way player from Japan. Very exciting stuff. What does he look like to you, who's probably seen a lot more footage of him at the very least than we have over here in Canada?
Well, the reports that you've been hearing about him, the 100-mile-per-hour fastball, the dipping, diving, splitter, or forkball, depends on what they prefer to say, and I mean the slut and really hard slider that just gets a lot of swings and misses, those are not exaggeration, those are real. I mean, he's had the stuff since he was in high school, where in high school he was also a top prospect and really wanted to come to major leagues. I'll get to that later, but he had to really harness the command because of his tall height. He has a lot of moving parts, and he had a little bit of a difficulty harnessing his stuff to the MPB hitters at first, but he really polished his command and control in the last few years and became genuinely, like, actually one of the best pitchers in the league. And it's not, I mean, he might be a prospect, but he's already really polished at the age 23. And that's what's exciting about him, because he has the talent and also the improvement, a huge improvement from when he was an amateur only a few years ago.
Well, that's certainly enticing. So now, obviously, there's a lot of talk, though, about his two-way potential. Oh, yeah. Is he actually, if he came to the major leagues, could he hold his own as an everyday position player?
Everyday position player, as you mean as like a hitter?
Yeah, as in like an outfielder.
I don't think he will play outfield in major leagues.
No, but could he? Does he have the actual ability to do that?
His ability as an outfielder has not really been talked about slash really exposed. He's mostly been DHing as a hitter. I mean, if he's in the lineup, I would imagine because he would also have to pitch when he goes to the major league, that no team would really make him field or anything like that, because you know you gotta protect your legs and everything.
But is he a good enough hitter to hold his own?
Yes, I do believe he can develop as a really pretty good Major League Baseball hitter. He already has a really good raw power, and his long arms allow him to reach for pitches that you wouldn't really expect a hitter to be able to reach.
So it's, you know, he sounds like a real outlier. So I don't know how apt the comparison is, but I want to know, the posting system does not sound like it is the same format as it was because of you know, an agreement between the Japanese League and Major League Baseball as it was when Yu Darvish came over with, you know, it's a $60 million mm-hmm. posting fee. So I'm just trying to get a sense of what has changed and then who has benefited from the changes in the posting system if Ohtani were to come after this season.
The main thing is that the maximum posting fee from the MPB from the Major League Baseball team to MPB team, it's capped at $20 million, and it absolutely benefits the Major League Baseball owners because they don't really have to give up as much money to talk to one of the finest talents in the Japanese league. And frankly, I think, in my opinion, it's a little disgraceful because MPB Japanese league is a world of its own, and but it is no secret that some players definitely do want to come to Major League Baseball to make their dreams come true. But however, the incentive for a team to give up one of their best players to a different league has gotten much smaller than what it used to be. But that's how it is, how the things are right now. And I believe Darvish got north of $50 million. I believe Masajaka got $51 million from the Red Sox. We could be talking about maybe like more, 70 or even more for Ohtani if they hadn't changed the maximum cap rule for the posting. But I think it would give much more incentive for the Nippon fighters to let him go to the major leagues. But because their benefits will be limited, and at the same time, Ohtani really wants to go to the major leagues, it's kind of like they don't really want to let him go for the sake of marketing, performance, and all that kind of stuff. But because it's the player's wish, they kind of have no choice but to let him go with a smaller posting fee than what they could have received if the rules hadn't changed from years ago.
But can the team simply say, we're not going to let you go, we're going to keep you in the Japanese yes. league another year?
Mm-hmm. That's, I mean, Ohtani has been in control of the fighters, you know, since he was drafted. And that's been the case that's been the case since he entered the pros. And I don't know exactly how the conversation went between these two, but I'm pretty sure Ohtani has been appealing to the club to be posted to the major league teams for a long time. And I think this is the year that the team finally has had the change of heart and decided to let him go to the major leagues because it's the player's wish.
It's interesting. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you there, but just what you're talking about there with the player's wish. You know, mm-hmm. We've heard reports that part of the reason that they're willing to just simply agree to this, even though, you know, especially because now with Ohtani with the new rules, because he's so young, he can't even get a contract like Tanaka did, but that mm-hmm. in order to agree not to go straight out of high school to the mm-hmm. United States, his agreement with Nippon Ham was that he would be able to leave whenever he wanted. I've heard that, and I was wondering if that's something you've heard as well.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. Maybe not when he would have been, whenever he would have been wanted to. Maybe it could have been like after 13 years, after he fulfills several, like maybe like checklists or something like that. If it were up to Otani, he would have been in major leagues by now. No. At the same time, they wouldn't really surprise. I don't think I really heard that yet. But I do think because he is not yet 24, 20, he's 23, not yet 24, fighters might have told, it's entirely possible that fighters told him that, hey, we can let you go at a very young age if you develop really well and do some really good things for us as on the field. I think that's entirely possible. And yeah, this might be the year. Or this is probably going to be the year.
So now, just hypothetically, if a Japanese high school pitcher did want to go directly to the United States, could he register for the MLB draft instead of going into the Japanese system? Like, what would be the result of that?
No, he would be under the international free agent rule.
Okay.
And I believe there hasn't been any case of Japanese high schoolers going straight to the United States, at least not yet. In 2009, Yusei Kikuchi, who is currently the ace of the Cebu Lions, he came really close to signing with an MLB team. I think at least 8 teams were interested in him. But after a lot of soul searching and talking with the clubs and talking with MLB scouts, he decided last minute to just go through the MPB draft and try for major leagues later. And he is a legitimate Japanese ace right now and could be posted as early as next year. Hmm. We can talk about that later. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we may have to bring that one back up. But before we do that, I want to switch gears here a bit. So we've talked about the changes to the posting system in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I could be wrong on this, but is the Korean system still the same as it was in the old one, where teams bid up to X dollars, or are they also capped at $20 million?
They're not. It's the $20 million thing is only between the MPB and Major League Baseball teams.
So then, as Korean baseball is clearly getting better and better, we're seeing more players come over to the United States, and also more former major leaguers going to Korea to rebuild their value. Do you think that baseball will try to put in a similar cap?
If it gets to the extent that the team gets maybe like 50 million or 60 million bid on a player, maybe. Because I think the Major League Baseball will want to do whatever to protect the Major League Baseball owners of interest. But the only player that really broke the 20 million mark in the KBO posting is Hyunjin Ryu, and he was an extraordinary talent in the Korean leagues. And at this moment, I don't really see anyone really breaking the mark or come anywhere close to it. So no, I don't think that MPB like cap's going to happen anytime soon. To the Korean baseball organization teams.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I am curious what the reason that even the NPB would have agreed to that $20 million cap at all. Why wouldn't they? You know, what did they get from MLB for agreeing to limit their profit on that side of things?
Well, I don't think it's really necessarily, well, agreeing to it. It's more that they kind of had to abide to it if they want to fulfill the player's wishes. Like, Masahiro Tanaka is one of the very, probably the first case of having to go to the U.S., wanting to go to the U.S. while that new CBA rule was in effect. And his old team, the Tohoku Rakuten Golden Eagles, has had him and the club has had to do a lot of talking in order for him to persuade him to let him go to the U.S. And, you know, they agreed to do it despite knowing that they're probably not going to get the same money that the fighters did with Yu Darvish or the Lions did with Masuzaka.
Yeah,
but at the same time, the MPB owners are constantly talking about how they can benefit with the system right now. They're going to try to propose new rulings to the current posting system.
Yeah, it seems like a very unusual sort of dynamic going on there between the two leagues, let alone the players in the leagues.
Mm-hmm. It is, and it's really hard. It's really fickle, I want to say. And I mean, remember, this is this posting system is a thing because MPB team. I mean, it was this system was created by the MPB teams at first because they were losing some of their players to the Major League Baseball teams without really much incentive. Like the very original case was back in the 60s, but it became more under the spotlight back in mid-90s when Hideo Nomo used the loophole in the Japanese league rules, and he called retirement and then signed with the LA Dodgers. So his old team, the Oryx Buffaloes, got nothing from him going to the major leagues.
Hmm.
And that was one of the pivotal points where the Japanese clubs were like, hey, we got to do something about this. We're losing our best players and we're not really getting anything about it. And I think actually Alfonso Soriano was also one of the cases where a Japanese team didn't get much anything from losing their player to a Major League Baseball team because he was with the Hiroshima Carp team but couldn't really get adjusted well to the Japanese life, so he wanted to get out of the team and became a free agent and signed with the New York Yankees.
It's interesting. We didn't hear too much about that Nomo story at the time. And so when we're talking about all these players, you know, like I mentioned, like the KBO is getting better. And then there's all these, Ohtani is dominating the coverage. You mentioned another name. Who are the guys that we should really be looking for this side of the world coming over in the next year or two?
You say Kikuchi is a name that I mentioned. He is the currently probably the front runner for the Sawamura Award, which is like the Cy Young Award in Japan for the Pacific League. And I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, but what I know is that his ERA is on the very south side of the 2.something. And also he's had 15 wins so far. And I think he either leads or is close to leading the league in strikeouts. And he's a lefty. And he also set the record for the highest velocity by a lefty pitcher in Japan in the MPB history. Mm-hmm. I believe he hit 98 miles per hour from the left side.
Well, seems to be lining up for that. And he would be older, too, so he would be coming under the Tanaka system, correct? Where $20 million and then a free agent contract.
Yes. And to be honest, he is 26. And after next season, he will be 27, 28. So teams will still be getting him in his prime years. Just
right.
That right now, the media's like, Ohtani this and Ohtani that. So you don't really hear too much about guys like Kikuchi or Norimoto. Norimoto is another MPB ace. He pitches for the Rakuten Golden Eagles, which is Tanaka's old team. I've been told that he also has a pretty good possibility of being posted to the majors, but just maybe not as soon as Kikuchi or Ohtani, but someday. And he's a righty. Has a good fastball and break. Good fastball, good poise, good secondary stuff. But in terms of striking out hitters and being dominant, Kikuchi is better. I would say Kikuchi is a better pitcher. as a pitcher, Kikuchi is better than Otani or Morimoto, but Otani by far has the biggest talent of all those three guys.
Interesting. So there's a few names for our listeners to write down and see if they show up in the next year or two when all the news starts coming in the off season about Japan.
Guarantee you, you're going to hear Kikuchi's name next winter.
Cool. Well,
because the Lions.
I was just going to say, I appreciate you joining us. We're just we're looking at running out of time here, but maybe we can have you back on in the off season and. And get some more scoop from you about what's going on for their off season and any more details that come up. Usually, go ahead.
Is there any more questions that you would like asked, answered, or anything like that?
No, I think we're good for tonight. I give you a chance to plug your Twitter account if people want to follow you. So where can they find you on the Twitter?
It's at SU. NG underscore MINKIM. It's basically my name with the underscore in between Sung and Min.
All right. Thank you, Sung Min Kim, for coming on Artificial Turf Wars, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Rich. This was a really quick and fun conversation. If the time goes quick, I've had fun.
All right. Take care.
Thank you, you too.
That was an excellent little chat with Sungmin Kim. Now, silly me, I didn't ask which was his last name, because I understand in some cultures that's reversed. So I don't want to screw that up. I'll just say his whole name every time.
Yeah. So what I take away from that, screw Otani. I want Yusei Kikuchi.
I want them both.
Yeah, that's right. Screw it. Get greedy. I want Kikuchi. I want Otani. And the third guy was Norimoto, Takahiro Morimoto. Let's get all three of them.
All in, baby. 100%. Lefty, one lefty and two righties?
Yep.
Sold. All right. Now that we got that all figured out, I guess we'll go your questions.
Time now to hear from our listeners.
That just seems silly.
Here are the rules. First I ask a question, then you ask a question.
Now, how does that sound, sweetheart?
Could you repeat the question, please?
Yes. Yes, we do have some good ones this week. I took a peek at the list and I thought, this is what I want to respond to right now. So we're going to start with Dave Church. Dave is, of course, one of our patrons. Thank you, Dave. Does Joe Biagini have a guaranteed spot on the roster next year? Now, that is tied to an Alex Hume question. Biagini as a starter has been mostly a disaster. Do you send him to Buffalo to try again, or do you put him in the MLB bullpen? This is like the Joe Biagini question extravaganza.
Joe Biagini power hour. I think the answer to Dave's question is no. Right, I don't think he has a guaranteed spot on the roster, partly because of Alex's question, which is about Biagini as a starter. I think the team wants to keep him there as depth. We talked about this briefly last week, I believe. Mm-hmm. But this concept of good minor league pitching depth. And I think the idea for them will be to get more starters in the offseason, whether that's Brett Anderson or whoever, I don't really know, in addition to the four already in camp, and have Biagini stretched out in Buffalo in the minors.
So, yeah, maybe he's got a spot on the 40-man.
Yeah, he's got that. That's pretty safe.
25-man, not so much. Here's a good one. Josh, at Lou Brown 34. Asks top three Joey Bats moments. So I presumably you and I agree on number one.
Yeah, I think that sounds pretty safe.
So how about we do second, third, and fourth Joey Bats moments after we agree on the bat flip?
Oh, jeez. Okay, you go first.
I have the stare down of Ivan Nova and subsequent home run off of David Robertson in the same game to break a tie, because that to me was the first time we went, oh, Jose Bautista, you wouldn't like him when he's angry, which was really at the time to me like totally mind-blowing that a player would do that. And again, you would he didn't charge the mound, which I thought by then there was going to be, even though there was a little dust up, that's not the way he got his revenge. So that was cool for me. You have one? Because I don't want to take them, potentially your moments.
Well, my number two would have been in a similar vein. It would have been the skipping home run off Darren O'Day in Baltimore.
That was a wonderful one, truly.
And then, sort of as like a corollary, this year again, he hit a three-run homer late off Baltimore to win the game.
Yeah, he hasn't done much right this year, but that was definitely one of them. So what other ones would I have? Just as a weird one that I thought was really great was him jawing at the fans while he pointed at the Blue Jays in first place in Boston at the scoreboard on the Green Monster, which of all the places to do that, I don't know why, but the Green Monster scoreboard seems like the most, I don't know, in your face of all the things you could do.
That's pretty great. And so my last one, it's like, I guess this is our four, right?
Yeah.
This would have been from 2015 as well. People forget, I think, Jose Bautista threw out his shoulder when trying to throw Delmon Young at first base earlier in the year.
Mm-hmm.
And for the entire season, basically, people weren't running on him. And it was a little bit crazy. And then when it came down to it, people think, okay, he's got no arm left. And he threw out those two Yankees. Including one at third and one at the plate, and he just like uncorked real throws. It's like, oh my god, it's still in there. And this was in the heat of a pennant race.
Yeah, that was cool. My fourth moment is actually going to be Jose Bautista's 50th home run.
Yeah, that was going to be mine too.
Yeah, because it was. It was off of a guy who was looking to win the Cy Young Award that year. It was in the first inning. It was the only run that the team scored. It was everything. It won the game for them, and it was the 50th home run, the first time a Blue Jay had ever hit 50. Super cool moment. And right when we were like, Jose Bautista is the real freaking deal, people. Deal with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's some very top moments that maybe not every list would have. Hop, skip, and a jump, man.
Yep.
So Alex Hume is also wondering, at ahume92, do you think the Jays may trade Pilar this winter? His defense has already taken a step back and will only worsen. Would you like to contradict Mr. Hume
there? No. Well, I'll contradict him on the will only worsen part. I don't agree with that notion.
Mm-hmm.
There's no evidence to support that. He has taken a defensive step back this year, though. But that's because he was just insanely good the last two seasons.
Yeah, I don't think you... I think you trade Kevin Pillar because he's not going to get any better with the bat. But people... with someone who wants a defensive center fielder, if they're going to give you a real asset for Kevin Pillar, yeah, go ahead. You don't need a fantastic defensive center fielder right now on this team. You need a decent defensive center fielder, and you need a guy who can actually... to have a better than average offensive profile. So you lose a little bit on defense and gain a bunch on offense, go nuts.
Yeah, or if you somehow get the money to sign like a Lorenzo Cain, then you trade Pilar to fill another hole.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's absolutely a movable piece. Do I think they do it, you know, first priority? No. It'll just be, I think, an opportunistic thing.
Yeah.
At Bo Bichette, again... still not sure how he hasn't been kicked off of that ID, whose name is now NNIUQ. It changes every week. When you post this episode on BP Toronto, oh, can you please be sure to include the recipe for Josh's birthday cake from the other day? It seems a reasonable request for those of you who missed the pictures.
Yeah, so I posted a picture of this cake that my girlfriend made for me for my birthday, which was Monday, and also the same birthday as your wife.
Happy birthday
but
all around.
I don't know the recipe because it was baked for me. So, no, I can't do that.
Y'all head on down to Bulk Barn and get as much peanut butter cup Reese's Pieces stuff as you possibly can and just start piling it on. That's apparently what we're doing. You want to read us the last question?
Sure. This is from Phil Golubovich at Philly G. Would you prefer to lose by death by 1,000 bloop singles or club to death with dingers?
Give me the dingers. Just pound me into oblivion with big hard hit baseballs, because I would feel like I knew what was going on. I would be frustrated to death by the blue singles.
And speaking as a pitcher, I could not agree more with this. I had a game recently. I was pitching, and I gave up 7 runs in 7 innings, and the hits combined could not have been more than 400 feet. It was the worst. It was like swinging bunts, flares over first, the entire game. And it sucked. Give me rockets off the fence or over it any day over that.
Yeah. Tell you you're doing something wrong, and then you can try and compensate for it. But when you feel like you've been unlucky for forever, what do you do different?
Exactly. It's just like, yeah. All right, like, eventually it's got to switch, right?
Apparently not when you give up 7 runs in 7 innings. Not
yeah.
so much. Oh. Well, thank you for all your questions. We will move on to our usual do-over segment.
Oh, my God. Did he really just say that?
But we can try again, right?
You talking about a do-over, baby? Are you talking about a f***ing door?
We believe in second chances.
And you you had some audio that you sent to me of Mark Shapiro on with Jeff Blair. Always gobs of fun. So we're going to give that a listen, and we'll see if our listeners also think Mr. Shapiro deserves, an opportunity.
We said all along that, because of our, the maturity of our roster, and the maybe lack of balance in that, along with the lack of upper-level talent and depth, due largely to trades, it was a precarious position, one that we were fortunate to avoid last year and one that we were unable to avoid this year.
Oh my God.
So that was him talking about the situation he was left with from the previous general manager?
Yeah. Like, he's basically ripping on Alex Anthopoulos for not giving them the depth from pitching, basically, because the position player depth, he didn't trade any position players. It couldn't be them. Okay, so I'd like to read you the ERAs of the pitchers that were traded that are in the major leagues, the starting pitchers.
Is this courtesy of Tao of Steve?
This is courtesy of Tao of Steve. Thank you for saying that. I was about to, but he should be credited. Jeff Hoffman, 5.45. Jairo Labour, 5.40. Matt Boyd, 5.33. Daniel Norris, 5.38, including an injury stint in that lasted quite a while. He's in the bullpen now.
And also, the Boyd ERA includes a 8 2/3 innings of no-hit ball in his last start.
In a September ball game, yes.
But that lowered his ERA, presumably, by a good chunk.
He certainly did. And this is what we're talking about. So, yes, that's still better than what the Blue Jays have gotten. I mean, I don't think any of... Well, no, Bolsinger has the lowest ERA among their fill-in starters at 6.31. But 5.33 with this offense wasn't winning those games either.
No, they did not give up a lot of assets that would have been useful right now, which is, I presume, what he's trying to say is, I would have had more useful pieces if. Yeah, and you wouldn't have two, ALCS appearances either. What do you
right.
want?
Well, that's the thing. It's like you wouldn't have the budget to do any of the things that you want to do, because the team would not be, they've drawn now their 3 million fans again. That was going to be my final thought, but who cares? They clear the 3 million threshold today, and that doesn't happen without those moves, and therefore you're not getting to sign Marco Estrada for another year at 13 million. You're probably trading away Josh Donaldson because you're over budget. So that's the do-over. It's like, don't just trash, casually trash the previous regime when those things you're specifically attacking, one, wouldn't have helped, and two, actually are the reason that you're where we are in terms of the good things right now.
So what's the do-over? What should he admit to instead when he comes on our podcast?
Hey, he should acknowledge, it's like, okay, yeah, I probably erred on that side. Yes, it would have been nice to have those guys for depth, and maybe, as Andrew Stone pointed out, that we could have developed them a little differently, not rushed them like some of those teams did. But point out that, yeah, those trades really helped get us to where we are today.
Indeed. On a lighter note, our other do-over is for Matt Dermody. Matt Dermody had the honor of finishing a Blue Jays game the other night. Matt then he wandered over to the dugout directly, and Marcus Stroman came out and had to inform him that when you finish a ball game, you need to go talk to Russell Martin, your catcher, about how happy you are that you just finished a winning ball game.
It was pretty funny.
Where are you?
How many games have you played in your life, Matt?
So I looked it up because I'm like, well, if he's been a starter and he hasn't thrown a lot of complete games, maybe he's kind of in a shock that he's just finished a game, right? I mean, it could be fish out of water. He's finished 46 games in the minor leagues. You should know what to do after 40 odd games, I think. So obviously, now our conclusion is therefore he thought it was the eighth inning.
That's the only thing that really makes sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense either. Because why would you not know it was the ninth inning?
Yeah. And here's another one. He has a game finished previously in a win.
So, normally I'm not a fan of the act like you've been there before. But I'm going to go with it this time. Oh, goodness.
In this case, it's remember that you've been there before.
Oh, no harm, no foul. But yeah, if you'd like to come on and explain where he was going, we would perfectly be happy to talk about that once and never mention again. It's wandering into the wilderness. I'm sorry. Did you have, my good man, a final thought?
Well, I already shared it.
Okay, $3 million. I have a final thought, albeit brief. At some point, I don't know why, after a horrible loss, sports writers insist on doing the same thing that they always do, even after a victory, and tell you that details will be up shortly while they do a game recap somewhere. Nobody wants those details. Like, zero Blue Jays fans want to know the details of a loss that is it 15-4 still? I don't have. Yeah. Nobody wants to know how it ended up 15-4. The score will do. Thank you. You can spare us any of the other. Take a night off, really. I mean, you don't get a lot of nights off during the season. Take tonight for yourself, whoever you are. Oh, my goodness. I do believe that that brings us to the end of another program. And as a result, I must say that you were Josh Howsam at Joshua Howsam. I was Greg Wisniewski at Coolhead 2010. Our guest was Sungmin Kim at Sung_Min Kim. And this has been episode number 75 of Artificial Turf Wars. And we'll talk at you next week.